Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure. Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Peter Flaherty, as always. What's going on, Peter? We're nearing the end of May. Are you still awake? Are you running on fumes? Do you have a stockpile of energy drinks that you've been surviving off of in the last few days and weeks?
Oh, absolutely. I think we could go like a whole podcast or two talking about energy drinks alone, but I've been rocking with the the Rainbow Sherbet Alani, and then I found this new flavor of rain called White Haze, and that gets me buzzing late night when I gotta get through.
Does that rain have 300 milligrams of caffeine? Because most of the rain that I've had are 300 milligrams, and those are like, it's a serious day when I'm cracking one of those.
It's a 300 one, and the fact that I'm letting it rip at like 7:38 o'clock at night is probably not super wise, but
you know, sugar free, it's healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how that works.
That's what I use to spin zone, but I mean, it's been a number of really late nights, and I guess you could also say like early mornings in the last week, just tournament prep and various pieces on regionals, draft guys and regionals that got released yesterday. But it's a super, super fun time here. I haven't had a ton of time to shut my eyes and rest. And when I have, it's been on my couch, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It's been a blast.
Yeah, this does feel like one of the very busiest periods at BA, just in general. The college team is in full swing. The amount of content, the volume of content, the analysis, the words on the site right now are awesome to see. Just like pointing to a few pieces that you and Jacob have done on the college side. Peter, you ranked every team in the field of 64. We have the full bracket out there. Jacob has breakdowns on every regional. If you want to kind of get to know what's going on in each regional, Peter, you have dove further into like the prospects to watch in the tournament. We've talked a little bit about the prospects we're excited about on this podcast in the tournament, but there's plenty there. I know the prospect team is currently in the process of updating all of our top 30s. We're constantly making updates to the top 100. We just rolled out the BA 500 this week, which feels like a milestone every year. But at the same time, it's also just another update. And even now, a day after publishing that, there are so many changes I would like to make to it, just because we're constantly getting feedback, because it's just shuffling these guys consistently and trying to put them in the best spots. We're in the process now of updating draft reports for that BA 500 list. There are a number of guys that have preseason or in-season reports. So by the time the draft is here, we'll have final updated reports on everyone. So hopefully you guys can get the best information possible on this draft class. So we're really just firing on all cylinders. May has been a really good month for the site and for BA in general. And for that, we really thank everyone who supports, who reads the articles, who listens to this podcast, who watches the YouTube channel and the various social networks. So thank you guys. It's we're kind of getting to the most fun part of the year for at least us on the amateur side. So with that, I guess we can talk a little bit about any of the pieces that you've written, Peter, anything about the NCAA tournament briefly, maybe any names to know on the BA 500, either big movers that you're intrigued by or just kind of how the board is laid out at this point. We have a new number one in the class, although it's not a name that is going to surprise anyone too much. Ethan Holliday slides from number two to number one. I now feel a lot more confident that the top three players in the class are Ethan Holliday, Seth Hernandez, Eli Willits. They seem to be the consensus top three players based on a lot of, I shouldn't say consensus. They seem to be the most strongly pushed for players at the very top of the board at this stage. And I feel good about having them in those three spots. I think all three of those guys have a real strong case for the number one player in the class for me. But what are your thoughts on kind of the order at the top, or if there are any players in particular that you just want to mention before we get into a fun question from a listener and a reader?
Yeah, I mean, it's still somewhat murky at the top, and you know, I think that the teams picking at or right near the top of the draft are probably still heavily scouting more guys than they probably like, but it seems like it's coming at least a little bit more into clearer focus as to like who that like 1A tier might be on draft night. Obviously there's, you know, still stuff to unfold, and we've got the tournament, and you know, sounds like there could also be a couple of college arms potentially in play up near the top. But those three names, as you said, is kind of, you know, where we're at right now. And so it should be a fun time ahead. And like the tournament was we've talked about, and especially recently, it's a really good opportunity and kind of almost a launching pad for some guys. Obviously, arms like Cade Anderson, Kyson Witherspoon, Liam Doyle, Jamie Arnold, even like a position guy in Ivar Arquette, if they're the reasons behind their team's run to Omaha, and it's hard to imagine if any of those teams get to Omaha, it won't be behind, you know, a handful of really good games from Ivo or a couple of good starts from any of those arms. I mean, it could propel them even higher up the board. And then that obviously applies for everyone on down. And, you know, even guys who right now are kind of slotted in the middle rounds or, you know, fall in that 4-6 bucket, they could play their way up even further. So it's a fun time of year and for a whole number of reasons.
Yeah, the one name that I'll just highlight, a couple names on the high school side who are moving up. I think Uli Fernsler, left-handed pitcher in Michigan, getting him into the top 75. I was excited to be able to do that. Just a really advanced pitchability lefty with a pretty deep arsenal of pitches right now. I mean, he's not going to blow you away with pure high octane fastball velocity, but I do think there's a lot of intriguing deception to his mix. I would really love to see his like vertical approach numbers, what sort of movement profile he's getting on the fastball, because he just gets that pitch to play up and he can throw strikes. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in a really good spot. Some other players who made up barrel moves for us: Mason Morris, right-handed pitcher at Ole Miss; Michael Olivito, a high school catcher out of New York. It sounds like he's getting a lot of buzz down the stretch. You'll see there is a lot of movement for the Northeast and Upper Midwest players. I think probably partially a function of their season just getting started later, and also just us kind of getting that information a little bit more lagging than some of the Southern players in the country. But Olivito is a really interesting catcher. With a pretty smooth swing, a good frame to dream on. I think on the Canadian side, Tim Piacentin, a third baseman, left-handed hitter, big physical frame, lots of power potential. I've gotten a lot of comparisons of him to Nathan Flewelling from last year's class, who signed for just about $775,000 in the third round. He's an up-arrow guy who's interesting, getting Talon Haley up the board higher into the top 100, a left-handed pitcher out of Mississippi. In terms of pure stuff, I think Talon Haley is one of the more interesting high school pitchers in the class, up to 97 from the left side. Really good breaking ball, has been through a lot. Sam Horn at Missouri. I wish they were playing in the tournament because I feel like he would be a prime candidate as a guy to kind of circle his name, see if he can move move the needle and push further up boards. His stuff is tremendous. We just really haven't seen him throw a ton. And then maybe the name I'm most excited to watch in the tournament, I think we mentioned him last week on the podcast, but Gage Wood at Arkansas. The more I watch him, the more I see his stuff, the more I see how the fastball plays, the more I see like some data points on his pitch mix. I'm super fascinated with him and think he could go up even further from kind of the third round range we have him in right now. Wouldn't shock me at all. So those are just kind of briefly some of the names that I think are intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that I have circled, and he was the one of the most prominent movers, especially on the prep side, is Oliveto.
Yeah.
Unsurprised. Like, Jupiter was his coming out party. That's kind of when he got a little bit famous, and he's obviously rode that momentum through this season. I really, really like him a lot. You know, as you said, good body, good swing, room to fill out more. Like, the defensive skill set needs a coat or two of polish, but that's not all that unsurprising, especially for a prep kid at this stage. And you know, hopefully that continues to progress. But as you said, really good swing. I think he's going to grow into above average or better power. I think it's an exciting blend of like now tools and hitability, but also projection. It wouldn't shock me at all if he continues to climb up and creep up even further as we go on here throughout the summer and the lead up to the draft. Like, he down in Jupiter, he was, and this could be kind of a knee jerk reaction without like looking at my notes from the event, but he was one of, if not the most impressive hitter that I saw and probably everyone saw. I think he went deep a couple of times, had a handful of extra base hits, like as productive as you could be against really, really good competition. So he was outstanding down there.
Yeah, and I don't want to talk too much about the BA 500 specifically. I'd say you guys, if you want to get all the scoop on it, maybe just go to the site. Like I said, we're in the process of updating reports for all the players on that list who need updated reports. All the new additions to the BA 500, guys who are mostly in that 400 to 500 range, but also just players who we didn't have ranked previously, have fairly updated reports. That'll give you a pretty complete picture of how we view them as players. So I'll just point to that and tell you guys to check that out if you haven't yet. I did want to touch briefly on your piece, Peter. You had 25 prospects to know in the NCAA tournament. Any names to highlight there, guys you're particularly excited either to see specifically in the tournament or just maybe some underclass names? I mean, Rock Chalowski has had a monumental season, and just knowing his defensive ability and reputation as a high schooler and seeing him kind of make the leap in college has been awesome. You have him pretty well positioned on that list. And then for people who have been following the draft coverage, it's probably a list of familiar names, but this is just a great reminder that, hey, even if you're not a college baseball fan specifically, you're going to have an opportunity to watch a ton of players who are about to be in affiliated ball and go in a pretty good spot on draft day.
Yeah, it's a fun piece to put together each year. And, you know, this year, unlike, you know, similar to every other year, it's pretty loaded from a draft prospect standpoint. I don't really think we need to touch on any of the names like near the top anymore, just because of how much we've talked about them. But as far as underclassmen go, Rock Chalowski right now is probably my 1-1 guy for 2026. That cycle isn't even going to begin for a couple of months, but it's hard to say right now that he's not at or right near the top.
We had, speaking of Rock, we had a question in the draft chat that I did this week. I believe someone asked, like, where would you have Rock Chalowski if he was draft eligible in this class? And I looked at our board and looked at basically other college shortstops, and I feel relatively confident that he would be the top college shortstop in the class. And so I said conservatively top 15 to get him ahead of Merrick Houston, who's currently our top college shortstop. Would you push back on that at all, or have any other specific placement of where you'd have him in this year's class?
No, not at all. I think just like off the top of my head, I'd probably go top 13, like right ahead of Ike Irish. I think I think that range is fair right about now for him, even if he was in this class. But I could easily see him getting shoved up into the top 10 and maybe even a little further, depending on how high you are on him. But
right,
he's just been outstanding. He had a really good freshman year, won Big Ten Player of the Year, could, you know, sleeper Golden Spikes Award finalist. He was just named a semifinalist. And it's kind of rare for a sophomore to be tabbed a finalist for the award. But
are we allowed to talk about our votes? You voted for that, right? Your final three?
Yeah, we should have talked about it pre-podcast, because right. I don't know if we can or not. Can we?
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know why we wouldn't be able to.
If we can't, I will say there's a non-zero chance someone on the podcast voted for him to be a finalist.
Okay, that's good, because I there's also a non-zero chance that someone else on the podcast didn't, but thought really hard before not putting his name down. All so, right, so it was very tough for me this year to get to my three names.
Yeah, agreed. This year was a lot tougher than others. I think that I had clicked around. And first, it's really, really cool and such a privilege to be able to vote on the award. So it's an opportunity that I don't take for granted. But man, I found myself clicking around between like four or five, yeah, six guys for that third name.
Typically, I feel like I go in knowing like these one or two are definitely going to be on my top three. And it's just a matter of like, who's the third one going to be? And this year it was like, there was really a group of like 10 or so names that I gave some pretty serious consideration to, and like separate, like just the same as we've talked about on the draft pod, like a lot of the top college prospects in this year's draft class are in that mix. They've always been tough to separate. I think for the award specifically, it's just as tough to separate, if not more so. So yeah, I did not. I mean, I feel good about the names that I sent because I think they're deserving, but I just don't feel good about the like lack of separation there.
Yeah, it was kind of a struggle, and I'm curious to see who the three finalists end up being.
Me too.
Because I really don't know. I mean, I feel like similar to you, I have an idea of, you know, who one or two of the guys might be, but man, that third one was a real wild card.
I can't find any reason why I can't tell my ballot. I won't force you to tell yours, but if USA wants to get on to me. But I voted for Alex Lodice, Florida State shortstop, Liam Doyle, Tennessee left-hander, and then Kyson Witherspoon, right-handed pitcher at Oklahoma. And like, just the more I looked into Kyson's case, just the consistency and how deep he pitched in the games in the SEC was pretty impressive to me. And I do think, like, even with some hiccups, that Liam Doyle has been the most dominant college pitcher this year. And then Lodice just doing what he did in the ACC as a defender, as a hitter. It was a pretty impressive season. So those were my three names.
Yeah, so I almost went with Doyle as my third. I thought hard about Cade Anderson. I thought really, really hard about Kyson Witherspoon, because yep, I still feel like, and I'm happy you gave him some love and a vote, because I feel like even with the top tier of arms, it still kind of feels like he goes a little bit overlooked. And that could be a byproduct of, you know, him being at OU and these other guys being at
maybe it's a bias against right-handed pitchers. We love the lefties.
Yeah, but I mean, he's outstanding, great athlete. The stuff is there, the strikes are there. It's kind of unorthodox with like the how he does it, with kind of the shorter arm action. He's a shorter kid, but the results have been unreal. I'll stand by this. He turned in the best start I saw last summer on the Cape before USA in the draft kind of tore up the league, and he diced a really, really good lineup that had like four or five USA guys, and mm-hmm, you know, flashed the trademark stuff he has now, like two distinct, really effective breaking balls, fastball up to 98. He held for the entirety of his six inning outing.
Yeah.
Just really impressive. But
I would say for me, Cade Anderson got a lot of thought as well, just given the strikeouts he amassed this year. But the specific separator between Kyson and Cade for me was just like the ERA being almost a full run lower, and then the homer prevention. Like, Cade Anderson has allowed a few home runs, so that was kind of where I tie broke a bit. But I have been impressed with both of their ability to pitch deep into games in the SEC. I think that's been impressive to see. But yeah, I'm curious who your three are, if you want to tell.
So we align on Alex Lodice. That one to me felt like a slam dunk going in, and I'd be pretty surprised if he wasn't a finalist, just what he's done results wise and kind of being the focal point of a really good Florida State lineup and being mm-hmm. one of the key reasons why they are where they are right now. Like, I mean, he's hitting over 400, and this is kind of where you focus a little bit more on the back of the baseball card. Like, that's really, really tough to beat. And especially mm-hmm. when you're playing at Florida State. So he was a no brainer for me. And then I also voted for Vaheva Aloy, little bit of a similar breath.
Yep.
Really, really good season at Arkansas. SEC Player of the Year, I believe. I should have probably checked on that before coming into it. But hit just under 360, 17 doubles, 18 jacks. You know, I could say he's got big time thunderous bat speed and plus power, but that doesn't really matter for the Golden Spikes. But
yeah, Vaheva was the Player of the Year too. You were right on that.
Yeah. So unreal season for Arkansas, similar to Lodi, like centerpiece of a really good lineup. It's a really good team. Good season in the SEC. That felt like a not a no-brainer necessarily, but I felt comfortable with that one. And then here, like, again, I had Witherspoon selected. I had Kate Anderson selected. I had Ivar Arquette selected. I think I had like 7 or 8 different guys selected. And then I eventually just settled on Rock because,
okay, again, all shortstops, a ballot after my own heart.
Yeah, so 3 for 3 on shortstops, 1 underclassman. It's rare for an underclassman to be a finalist, but
I think very deserving of it, though.
Yeah, if this is not a, you know, it depends year to year, but if this is not a year worthy of a Golden Spikes finalist nod, it'll be tough to see what does, at least for an underclassman. But he had 370 with 19 doubles, 23 homers, 69 RBIs, 44 walks, just 28 Ks. Obviously playing a really, really good shortstop. And it's a UCLA team that had a down couple of years. But he has been the spark plug and kind of the straw that stirs the drink for the Bruins and getting them back to kind of the typical UCLA teams you would see under Coach Savage, who's done an outstanding job there. But he's been just excellent in every sense of the word. The impact has increased, obviously, plus defender at short, kind of a pull heavy approach. But, you know, he's stepping on baseballs with much more regularity this spring, which has been encouraging to see. So, like, feel for the barrels there. So, I mean, we kind of got a little bit into the weeds onto, you know, what makes him an intriguing and high end prospect, but I felt he was very deserving of a Golden Spikes finalist vote. So, I mean, we'll see who the final three are. Like, I don't think there would be, you know, similar to Selection Monday, weirdly enough, I don't think there would be a name, unless it comes way out of left field, that would like totally shock me. Like, I think I could find myself sitting there being like, oh, okay, that makes sense for almost all of the semifinalists. So we'll see. It'll be a fun year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Okay, cool. Let's move on to, we got a question from Jordan on Twitter, who asked the other day, can you have a discussion on which players possess the best tool in each category for both hitters and pitchers? We love talking tools on these podcasts. I mean, we've had a best tools draft preseason. So I felt like kind of as we're getting closer to draft day, we've had nearly a full season for everyone on the amateur side, maybe just to revisit that best tools conversation and kind of just work through hitter and pitcher tools and kind of talk through who our choices would be, maybe some of the candidates, if there are any like no-brainer picks, and see what we think. So I really like this question. I'm excited to get into this tools. I got a couple different spreadsheets pulled up here with some data. I've got our preseason best tools names just to reference, see if there are any big changes there. I'm not sure if you have a specific tool you want to start with, Peter, but I feel like we can just kind of work through this and see what we think at this stage.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure. Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's VANTA.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Yeah, so unless you thought differently, I feel like this could be a little more informal and more of a discussion than our usual right. back and forth draft.
Where yeah, we try no and need to get strategic.
Compete to fill out a player. But I feel like fastball is a good place to start, right?
Okay, yeah, fastball. Let's do it. And we'll lump, I mean, typically we separate college and high school, but I think throwing them all into the same bucket here makes some sense. So
yeah, I mean, Liam Doyle, I mean, for me, the two Tennessee arms, Liam Doyle and AJ Russell.
Yeah, Doyle is kind of the first one that stands out to me just because
yeah, he's been doing it all year.
It's been such a high usage pitch, throws it hard, he gets a ton of miss. I don't know if you have his current swing and miss numbers up, but like this fastball is like the bulk of the reason that he's going to be taken as high as he is taken. It's been just such an exceptional pitch. I think last time I checked, it was like a 40, still above a 40% whiff rate on the pitch. I mean, it's great riding life. So that's a good one. You said AJ Russell as well. That's a ton of movement on that pitch. Another candidate that I think is interesting, and this is maybe not like most effective fastball now, but in terms of like just fastball characteristics, I think LSU ready Jacob Mayers. Fastball is super intriguing. I mean, he has really walked a lot of people. His walk rate for his career is kind of insane, but he'll get up to 101, 102. He has, I would imagine, some of the best induced vertical break numbers in the country. I mean, previously we'd had him at like more than 22 inches on average of IVB, which is just silly. And then one of the other fastballs that I really like is Brian Curley, right-handed pitcher at Georgia. He sits in the mid-90s, touches 100, flat approach angle. It's a high spin fastball as well. His swing and miss rate is not quite as gaudy as Liam Doyle's, but that would be another one I think of. Curious if there are any other names you mentioned as I scan down to see who I would pick on the high school side.
Yeah, Mayers is a fun one because it's 30 control, and that might be a little generous. It's probably closer to 20 than it is a 30, but like the fastball, you could argue, I mean, it's a 6, easy. You could argue a 7 on it. Just the premium velo, like you said, I think he bumped 101 last week. It may have been 102 at some point. At some point this year, like ultra high release height, crazy ride and plus carry. Obviously the release height and arm slot plays a little bit into it. He's straight like north south. So, you know, that adds a few inches of vert to it. But I don't know when he would toe the rubber in the postseason, kind of in more of a higher leverage situation. But if he does, it's almost appointment television watching him throw because it really is fascinating. But Curley fit into that bucket for me. I think Kyson Witherspoon to an extent does as well. I'm trying to think.
The guys on the high school side that I'll mention, I mean, all three of the pitchers who have touched 100 miles per hour in the high school, I think deserve mention. Miguel Cime Jr. in New York, Seth Hernandez at Corona, and then Jack Bauer, who obviously established a left-handed pitching triple-digit club. Those are probably the easiest three to say with reasonable confidence. There's some other guys who have fastballs that play better, but maybe don't have that kind of velocity. But those would be at the top of my list for best fastball. Landon Harmon, the ease with which he gets upper 90s would also be another.
Yeah, I was going to say Landon Harmon was one of the names, if not the name that really stood out to me. But what about for you, secondary-wise, at least starting on the college side? I guess we could bucket all of the secondaries into one.
Together.
We don't whittle it down.
That makes sense. If we want to start on college, I think Jamie Arnold and Cade Anderson are two that I still point to. I mean, really, even Kyson Witherspoon too with his slider. Malachi's slider in a vacuum, I think, might be as dynamic as anyone here. I just think the others probably get better. They're more effective now, just given the command piece to it. But like the angle that Arnold attacks from, Anderson's spin, and I think Anderson probably could have an argument for both slider and curveball given what the slider has done, but I personally like the curveball. I like the depth. I like the spin of that pitch. I just like the miss that he's gotten historically with that pitch. So those would be kind of the ones that jump out. Maybe none super surprising depending on what you think of Malachi, but who would you say?
not to make it a podcast of redundancy, but it's hard hard to beat the, like, Cade Anderson's curveball is right there at the top for me, especially when you're talking about kind of the top tier of arms. We could get deeper and deeper with kind of deeper pull guys, but yeah, Cade Anderson's curveball, Jamie Arnold's slider, like that's the creme de la creme, at least on the college side. Obviously high school, you got Seth's changeup.
And are we including all secondaries here?
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
Unless no, that's fine. But I was just thinking spin. So to lump
we'll
in another
spin first then. But okay. Yeah, Anderson and Arnold for me are right there. The changeups are obvious, I think. Mm-hmm. But
high school spin. You have any of those?
I'll let you lead the charge on the high school spin.
So I think Seth could have a good one. I wouldn't immediately throw him into that mix. I mean, Luke LaCourse is a guy who was an up arrow pitcher. He's a high school pitcher out of Michigan, right-hander, 6'3", 220-pound frame. He has like just ridiculous pure spin rates on his breaking ball, like gotten up to like 3,500 RPMs, which is towards a territory that like I can't remember a number of players that have been in that range. Reed Worley has always had a really high spin breaking ball that I feel like factors in here. This year with our high school pitchers in particular, I think we have less true bangers with our top end arms than maybe we've had previously. Like, I think all of the guys at the top of the board have good breaking balls, but maybe fewer like Carter Stewart-esque breaking balls. I think some of the better pure breaking balls are found in pitchers a little bit further down the board, but those would be the guys. I mean, Aaron Watson, I actually should mention, I was really impressed with like the power to his mid-80s slider he showed at NHSI. It was good feel, it was snappy, it was hard, it was consistently around the zone. So that'd be another one that I mentioned that I really like.
Yeah, Michael Lombardi too on the college side, like a little bit of a deeper pull. His curveball is comfortably a plus pitch. I mean, you could argue.
Yep, Tulane ready.
Yep, you could, you know, depending on your grading system works, you could argue a 65 on it. For me, it's a comfy six. And then circling back to the fastball, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Arkansas righty Gagewood. For me, that's another 70 pitch.
Yeah, I should have mentioned his as well. I talked about him before this combo, but yeah, he definitely belongs there.
Yeah, no doubt. 70. Sam Horn from Mizzou is another really interesting fastball. I hope he plays somewhere before the draft. I wish some Cape team would scoop him because he needs to throw way more than he has, but
right,
who knows, maybe his camp feels like he's done enough.
Looping in the changeups here, I mean, there are two very obvious ones for me that I feel like are clearly at the top, and it's Tyler Bremner on the college side, and it's Seth Hernandez on the high school side. Just the usage on those pitches, the confidence to throw for strikes, the ability to bury for chases. I think they're both 70s, and I would feel pretty comfortable about putting 70s on both of them. Any others to name there?
Double sevens for me on it. Angel Cervantes' changeup, high school side, is a really good pitch. One I've liked for quite some time now, and obviously I think everyone feels pretty similar to it, or similar how I feel. Cade Crossland's a deeper pull. The results haven't been there, and they've been a little inconsistent at Oklahoma, but I still like the arm, and I like the arsenal and just kind of the overall body of work with him. Commanding the baseball is going to be key, and getting more consistent results and consistent positive results is also going to be key, but I do like him a good bit.
Joseph Jerwa, Logan Lunsford would be two other college names I mentioned. They have solid ones as well. Players who got votes on our preseason teams include Zach Root and Cruz Schoolcraft on the high school side. So I think all of those names make a lot of sense to at least mention. All right, last tool for the pitchers. We're kind of going to speed through the rest to get out of here in time today. Control and command, if you want to lump them into one, or just do control, however you want to do it, really.
Yeah, I guess we could lump them into one and just call it like strike throwers. Again, for me, Tyler Bremner really stands out. Jamie Arnold stands out. Cade Anderson stands out. I mean, you can kind of get a feel for, you know, just how highly regarded these arms are at the top. Especially Anderson and Arnold, like the combination of strikes and stuff is really enticing. Kyson Witherspoon took a major step forward in the command and control department since last spring. He's a really advanced strike thrower. Joseph Jerwa, like you said, Anthony Ianson for me is comfortably plus that department. Like,
did you say Tyler Bremner? Because I think he'd be my
I said list. I hope I let off with Bremner because he might be at or near the top of that category.
He's my favorite in this category, just given the track record that he's done it. And I mean, his proximity to the top of the board. The sleeper piece that I put out, I actually had a couple pitchers specifically who I tagged just because their control is so good. A few of those like deeper college arms are Jack Anker at Fresno State, Avan Cabral at Northeastern, Ruger Riojas at Texas, who's been used as a reliever and starter. I would like to see him start full time, actually, after he gets drafted. That would be cool. And then Sean Youngerman, Oklahoma State, on the high school side. I feel like Seth Hernandez, Angel Cervantes are the two most frequently mentioned at the top of the board. And then I also was pretty intrigued with Cooper Underwood, left-handed pitcher in Georgia. And then I think Uli Fernsler, the Michigan lefty as well, should get some play here. His track record of throwing strikes is pretty high caliber.
Yeah, I like, just from a sheer prospect standpoint, I like him a whole lot. I know he's a big helium guy, probably the biggest helium guy actually in the BA 500, but I mean, I could see him creeping up a little bit further. I really, really like him a ton. So I think teams that were hoping that he'd be there for pick three are probably going to be out of luck at this point. I'd be shocked if he lasts that long. Just, you know.
Or maybe teams that have like six picks in the first three rounds, they pick three might work for them, but
yeah,
not
exactly. That's the typical third pick, like third round pick.
Yeah.
A little, okay.
Let's move into hitter tools, and apologies for kind of rushing through this. I feel like we could spend multiple hours talking through these tools and going into detail, but you know, plenty of other things we have to get to today. So let's save the hit tool. Let's table the hit tool for last. It's the most important, but I think it's the most difficult. How about speed?
Run wise, Kane Kepley's a plus runner. I'm kind of just running through it mentally at the top.
Speed on college side, Kepley is a good one. I think of Cam Cannarella. I think of Michael Gupton, who's less of a key name. He's more of a track star than either of these guys. But if you want to focus on just like top end prospects, those two outfielders in the ACC you mentioned would be good ones. Let me see if there is anyone else here. RJ Austin was mentioned on a preseason team. Scouting directors voted him number one in the fastest run category. On the high school side, I mean, Eli Willits is a plus runner. I don't think he's a true burner, but he can get after it a little bit. We've got guys like Brock Sell, Slater DeBrunn, Anthony Pack Jr. I know I'm missing one high school outfielder who can really run. William Patrick is extremely fast on the high school side. Gabe Grallo, Sean Gamble, plus runner. Maybe fewer like 80s, at least guys I feel confident are 80s, but still Hall as well. He's turned in 70 grade run times. I'm sure there have been some 80s he's turned in. So those would be all kind of the names on the high school side for speed.
Yeah, and what stands out to me, like with someone like Kane Kepley especially, Cannarella obviously raw plus runner, but Kepley's baseball sense and just baseball acumen helps the run tool play up that much more. Like, he knows how to use his legs on the base paths. Like, he's a disruptor. He mixes in jump leads, walking leads. Like, he's a really effective base stealer. It translates on the grass and center field as well. So, I mean, it makes the plus run with him all the more enticing.
Yep. Agreed. Okay. Let's stick with the supplemental tools. We'll do fielding next. Maybe the easiest category for us.
Like, almost as easy as changeup, I think, because I think we can just go one and one.
Yeah, we're either going to say Merrick Houston first or we're going to say Billy Carlson first.
Yeah, I was going to say it's Merrick and Billy. So that's,
and then I think maybe
forget it category.
It may be getting a little bit more specific. Like on the catching side, I think Caden Bodine, just like with his receiving ability, doesn't have the biggest like arm in the world, but in terms of like how he gets it done behind the plate, just get tons of positive feedback about him. In the outfield, I think you have to mention Kepley, have to mention Cannarella, same guys for speed. They both have really great instincts, like kind of what you're talking about with Kepley in the bases. I think it plays similarly in the outfield. Slater DeBrunn, I think, is a really good defensive outfielder. I think those would maybe be the names. You can mention any if you think I'm missing some.
Luke Stevenson stands out to me as well. Like, I think Bodine is the more polished receiver with softer hands, but from a well-rounded catcher defensive skill set, Luke Stevenson's at the top of the class for me. Like, plus arm, really good receiver, strike stealer, consistently works below the baseball, no doubt plus defender for me. The bat's a little bit lighter than I was anticipating it being at this point, but it's above average power to the pull side. Strikeouts are a little high, but
the one other player I would have felt bad if I didn't mention, but I think Daniel Pierce is a pretty locked and loaded plus defender at shortstop. He gets a little bit less attention nationally just because Billy Carlson is such a wizard with the glove, but I do think Pierce is pretty loud there as well. Yeah. Okay, let's move into hit and power. Do you have a preference for one or the other?
No, we can take it wherever you want.
Let's go power first, just because I think there are more good options, especially on the college side. So speaking specifically here of raw power, maybe you can fold in game power if you want as well, but I feel like Jace Laviolette has to be in the conversation here. I feel like Nolan Schubart has to be in the conversation here. There are some older guys in the class like Jared Jones, who has really impressive raw power, who I would want to mention.
Yeah, raw power, those three guys are sevens. But I mean, when you bake in game power, like Vaheva Aloy really stands out for me. It's no doubt plus. Also in the seven raw power category is Brandon Compton. He had a down year. I really expected him, and I think a lot of people expected him to have a monster year, especially playing in the hitter-friendly environment at Arizona State, but wasn't quite as productive. But that's seven raw, no doubt, for me.
Some sleeper Devin guys I have.
Wise is good.
Some sleeper names, or at least guys further down. Jack Marochnik with Butler has really big EVs. Landon Vitarek at Cincinnati, big EVs. James Quinn Irons at George Mason, huge EVs. And then Dominic Hellman at Oregon. He had huge power in high school, and he's made a lot more contact this spring. And I don't think anyone would question his raw power. On the high school side, power-wise, Ethan Holliday and Xavier Nines feel like the obvious first two names to mention. Probably the guys I'll stick with there.
Yeah, those are the two big ones on the high school side and who I'd probably hit on first. And then I guess, you know, not I guess, but Andrew Fisher is no doubt plus to the pull side, I will say. For me, to all fields, it's a 55, but it's a comfy six to the pull side. So he'd kind of be another name I'd throw into the mix.
Okay, and then rounding it out here, as we get down to the wire on our recording time, but hit tool, I think maybe the scarcest tool probably in every draft class, just because it's the hardest thing to do on the baseball field, but especially in this year's class. I just think there are not a lot of hitters you can comfortably put a six on their pure hitting ability. On the high school side, I think the top two are Kaysen Cunningham out of Texas, who has kind of long been the most advanced pure hitter in the class. And I think increasingly JoJo Parker is being talked about in that tier. He also has a really sweet lefty swing. But if I had to pick one in the entire class, I would go Kaysen Cunningham. And I'd probably take him over any of the college guys too.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. Eli Willits obviously also has an advanced hit tool. And then on the college side, it is definitely more scarce. Like I slam dunk six hit tools, it'd be hard to come by. Like Aiden Bodine is at the top there for me, just from a pure hit ability standpoint.
Yeah, pure contact skills. I think he's a guy who is kind of entered the year standing out. I think he still stands out. I believe in terms of zone contact, he has the best zone contact of anyone in the 500. Charles Davalon at Arkansas would be another one ranked highly, who has just really advanced pure contact skills. The guys I was thinking might be entering the year, Cam Cannarella. It's maybe not been quite as good as I thought it was going to be. If I had to pick one pure hitter on the college side at this point, it might be Brent Summerhill at Arizona. I just think he's got a pretty well-rounded approach, contact ability, pitch selection. The performance has been really good. So he might be the pick for me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's a scarce group at the top of the college class. It's like Bodine is a six hit for me. You know, Gavin Keelan's really swung the bat well. It might be closer to a 55, though, than it is a six. Yeah, that's for slam dunk college hit. Merrick Houston as well has an advanced hit tool. But like we've mentioned in almost every podcast when talking about the 25 class, there's a lot of give and take with almost every player. It's like you've got these big power guys, but the hit tool really lacks polish, or you've got a plus hit tool like Caden Bodine and you got below average power. So the well-rounded profiles are a little bit harder to come by in this year's class.
Agreed. But that kind of runs it down for best tools. Maybe bit more of a brief, quick, fast-paced conversation than we typically do on this pod, but it is a busy time, so we've got to get out of here and get some other stuff. But thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting BA, as mentioned earlier. We really do appreciate it. And Peter, hope you get some sleep before regionals kick off tomorrow or today as you're listening to this podcast.
Oh, yeah. I'm fired up. I'll probably get like 4 or 5 hours tonight, and we'll head right into it's going to be an awesome weekend.
Beautiful. All right. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure. Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.